There was some very sad news for basketball fans yesterday. David Stern, the former commissioner of the NBA, passed away 3 weeks after suffering a brain hemorrhage.
There's been a huge outpouring of support and praise for Stern, who oversaw the NBA for 30 years, from 1984 to 2014.
The NBA wouldn't be the league it is today without David Stern. Working his way up the ranks,
The Athletic's David Aldridge has interviewed David Stern many times and has covered the NBA for much of Stern's tenure. He joins us today to look back at Stern's remarkable life and legacy,
including how Stern took a league that was very much at a crossroads in the early 1980s and helped transform it into the hugely successful global enterprise that it is today. From Wondery and The Athletic, I'm Kavitha Davidson.
And I'm Andres Kelto. It's Thursday, January 2nd, and this is The Lead. And just a quick heads up, this episode contains the use of an offensive racial epithet.
It felt like something great was happening.
There was just something about the emotion and that moment.
You gotta go faster, faster!
The failures of the past don't matter because we've got this guy.
I have never seen anything like that.
That's not good news.
This isn't a story where you interview the athlete and go home. It stays with you.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
David, you knew and covered David Stern for quite a long time. What are some of your favorite memories of him?
Well, I would say, first and foremost, David was a challenging person. He did not suffer fools gladly, always wanted to make sure that you knew what you were talking about when you were talking to him.
Was the fix in for the lottery?
I have two answers for that. I'll give you the easy one. No, and a statement. Shame on you for asking.
You know, I understand why.
So he was not a passive listener. He was an aggressive listener. And if you said anything that was incorrect or at least not in correct context, he would come right back at you.
And the game rigging by a former NBA referee, illegal betting.
There's a difference between game rigging and illegal betting. Okay. What are you suggesting?
The illegal betting. Yes. Of an NBA yes.
He was a classic interrupter. And I say that with great affection because he was obviously brilliant and driven, and his intellect and his persona, I think, are what make him, in my view, one of the two great commissioners in the history of any team sport. The other one being Pete Rozelle in the NFL. I don't think it's even close after those two.
And just from reading some of the stories you've written about him, it sounds like he was not the kind of guy you'd want to show up late to a lunch with.
No, that was Barcelona, 92. I was covering the Olympics for the Washington Post. I was covering the Dream Team. We were staying about a half hour to 45 minutes from where the Dream Team was staying, which was this luxury hotel in downtown Barcelona. We hit traffic. I don't know. I don't live in Spain, so I don't know why there was traffic, but there was. And I wound up being about 20 minutes late to have lunch with David. When I got there, he was not happy. And this was pre-cell phone, so I could not pick up the phone right. And call him and tell him I was going to be late. So you had to kind of beg for forgiveness. But once the interview started, he was great, as he always was.
And, you know, David Stern is known for kind of revolutionizing the business of the NBA. But first and foremost, David Stern loved basketball.
He did. He was a fan. He was a Knicks fan growing up. Loved the game. It was very difficult for him to kind of put his fandom aside. Once he started moving up the ranks in the NBA, he started as an attorney during the 60s, was very involved in the Oscar Robertson decision that ultimately led to free agency, and then became commissioner in 1984.
The Houston Rockets select Hakeem Olajuwon of the University of Houston.
It is official.
The NBA that David Stern took over back in 1984 was much different than the league we know today. Can you just describe the NBA in the early 80s?
They would show NBA finals games at 11:30 at night Eastern time on tape delay. That was how little people cared about the NBA at that particular time. There was just no interest in watching the players of that era in prime time.
When I took over the NBA, our players' reputations were, I would say, in the basement of the pyramid of celebrity.
The league did not have any type of real corporate presence other than a couple of corporate sponsors here or there.
This CBS Sports Special is sponsored by the Miller Brewing Company, brewers of Miller High Life. If you've got the time, we've got the beer. Subaru, inexpensive and built to stay that way. And by Blue Stratos, the spirited new men's cologne and aftershave for the free spirit in man.
There was a perception, which was fueled in large part by a story in the Los Angeles Times that claimed that 75% of the league's players were using drugs. There was a perception that there were too many black players on too many teams to mollify or to be interesting to white America. And so the league suffered as kind of a second-tier major sport.
And, you know, you're talking about race relations in the early 80s. You're talking about drugs in the early 80s. How fair were some of these characterizations?
Well, I think many of them were caricatures and exaggerations. Again, I don't believe that 75% of the NBA's players were using drugs. I certainly think a lot of players were.
A week from today, a grand jury will begin hearing testimony about the circumstances surrounding the death of Len Bias, a death caused by cocaine intoxication. Bias died 2 days after he was chosen by the Boston Celtics in the NBA draft.
I certainly think there was a drug problem in the NBA, but again, I certainly think that was an exaggeration, and it was certainly, I believe, racially motivated more than anything else. And the reluctance of fans to embrace teams with black players is the famous example of the Knicks having either 11 or 12 black players in a particular season and being derided by some, not all, but by some people as the Niggerbockers instead of the Knickerbockers. So, you know, that was out there. It was real. It was a problem. And it was, I think, central to the challenges that the NBA faced at that time.
Well, so David takes over in 1984. He's almost immediately confronted with some challenges, but the NBA goes through this rise in the 80s and 90s. When do things start to really turn around?
5 seconds to go. Magic with a hook shot, scores with two. And the Celtics trail by one with 2 seconds.
All right, here's Dennis, gets it in the Bird. Larry, a runner.
Got it! Ball game's over, Boston wins.
Two. Get Larry Bird and Magic Johnson to come into the league roughly at the same time was an amazing bit of good fortune. To have one go to the league's most important franchise, the Boston Celtics, and to have the other go to the league's second most important franchise, the Los Angeles Lakers, for them to instantly transform both of those teams into championship contenders had nothing to do with David Stern. That was just incredible good fortune, incredible good luck. I think it was a good thing that one was white and one was black. Not because it played into racial stereotypes, though it certainly did for some. But I think it was important for the NBA to have a white player who was great. You know, you have to be honest about these things. You have to have players that people can emulate and their kids can emulate. So from that standpoint, Larry Bird being in the league was a very important thing. But it was equally important for Magic to be in the league because Magic made passing cool.
Intercepted by Magic. And here he comes from behind the back, a fake. Oh, the pass. Here we go.
And Larry Bird made passing the ball cool. You had the two biggest stars in the league be guys that loved passing the ball to teammates. That made those teams fun to watch. And the fact that, again, that they were the two most important teams and that they almost immediately started facing each other in NBA finals was just hugely important for the league.
So the league obviously benefits from having these transcendent stars to showcase, but it's in part David Stern's marketing mind that helps put the spotlight on them.
Off the floor, Stern and the league was really working very hard to kind of get corporate sponsorship more involved with the league.
Sometimes I dream that he
where they really were pushing the individual star power of their star players. And having those corporate sponsors not only bankrolling the league, but showcasing those players, showcasing the star players in commercials that you would see over and over and over again, really was a turning point because you never saw black players in advertisements, you know, for kind of mainstream America products. You very rarely did. Now, OJ started it with Hertz, certainly, in the late 70s, but it was the showcase of NBA players like Magic, like Bird, like Isaiah Thomas, like Michael Jordan, as they came into the league and became stars with some of these corporate sponsorships that really started to turn the tide.
And so the NBA is going through this incredible rise, and then less than a decade into his tenure as commissioner, David Stern faces a major test. The announcement. Magic Johnson tells the world that he has HIV.
Because of the HIV virus that I have attained, I will have to retire from the Lakers today.
Can you just remind us how much this announcement rocked the NBA and really the United States?
It was a seminal moment in sports history, but I think in American history, really. If you were around in 1991, the notion of what HIV was and what AIDS was completely, manifestly different than it is now. It was a disease that was, because of the still latent and clear homophobia that was going on in our country at the time, derided and viewed with scorn and viewed as something that promiscuous gay men got. And there was a large segment of the population that thought they got what they deserved, to be completely honest with you. And also at the time, there was no difference in the minds of the public between HIV and AIDS.
I just want to make clear, first of all, that I do not have the AIDS disease, because I know a lot of you want to know that, but the HIV virus.
If you had HIV, people thought you had AIDS. And if you had AIDS, everybody thought you were going to die.
I plan on going on living for a long time, bugging you guys like I've always have. So you'll see me around. I plan on being with the Lakers in the league. Hopefully David will have me for a while.
And so when Magic Johnson announced on November 7th, 1991, that he had the HIV virus, we all thought he was going to die within a short period of time. And so that was a devastating blow to the NBA, because Magic was, at the time, one of the three most important people in the NBA, one of the three most important players in the NBA. I mean, you have to remember, they won five championships in Los Angeles with Magic Johnson as the centerpiece of that team. He was this incredibly charismatic, handsome, and dynamic personality that not only fans loved, but the media loved. We all were in Magic's spell because he smiled and he was available and accessible. So when that announcement came, it was a gut punch for everybody.
Yeah, this was very much uncharted territory. How did David Stern handle all of this? I mean, Magic doesn't play that season, but he's racking up these all-star votes. And, you know, Stern's kind of left with this big decision of whether or not to have Magic play in the all-star game.
The all-star game was in February of 1992 in Orlando. And the problem was that even though Magic had announced in November of the previous year that he was retiring, he was still voted into the All-Star game as a starter by fans.
And in the midst of this, some of Magic's peers were afraid to play against him because of fears about HIV.
There were several very public star players like Karl Malone, like Mark Price, that expressed reservations on the record about playing with or playing against someone who was HIV positive, because the thought was, what happens if someone gets cut? What happens if Magic gets hit above the eye and starts bleeding, and then his blood seeps into a cut that you have? What would happen? And these were real questions that real people were asking at the time.
We had a player saying he wouldn't play with Magic, and we said, then you won't play because Magic's playing.
Finally, the league and David Stern decided that the league would honor the wishes of the fans and not only allow Magic to play, but to start in the All-Star game. And what resulted was one of the most indelible moments in NBA history.
One of the greatest players of all time making this playoff All-Star game appearance, Irvin Magic Johnson!
Magic was great in the game. He had 25 points and 9 assists, and the unbelievable ending of the game came when Magic, in the fourth quarter, and Lord knows who was ahead or behind at the time, demanded the ball, called over Isaiah Thomas.
Three-pointer, yes! Oh, my!
It had to be 26 or 27 feet, and it went in. And the game ended. It just ended at that point. I think there was like 15 seconds left in the game, and it didn't matter. Everybody just stormed the floor because they wanted to hug Magic and they wanted to celebrate this incredible achievement of his.
Ladies and gentlemen, you just can't orchestrate it better than that. But when you're great, you deliver on cue. Three straight trays for Johnson.
And, you know, David Stern was, again, central to that happening.
And that same year, the Dream Team is heading to Barcelona, obviously this landmark moment in basketball. And under David Stern's leadership, Magic is allowed to play in the Olympics as well. What was the impact, really the global impact of that?
He was on the team that won the gold medal. He was a central part of the Dream Team, which is the greatest assembly of talent in the history of team sports, and which was a true marker in terms of the growth of basketball and the growth of the NBA as an international sport, because the world was able to see it in Spain, and the league left a footprint around the world, especially in Europe, though, that led to the modern era of the NBA, which led to players like Dirk Nowitzki and Pau Gasol and all of the other great players from international waters that came over and became stars in the NBA. That all started with the Dream Team, and the Dream Team started with Magic. So the NBA had a huge impact on not only basketball, but on the perception of what HIV meant. You know, one of the most important shows that came on was a Nickelodeon show that was for children, for kids, for young kids and teenagers about what HIV was.
Linda Ellerbe, I remember that special.
Yeah, I was very fortunate. I was able to talk to Linda Ellerbe, who was the host of that show. And she told me that the reason that show got on the air, the only reason that show got on the air is because David Stern made it happen.
What was your first reaction when you found out you had the HIV, the AIDS virus?
Well, my first reaction was you're devastated, you're upset, you're disappointed. Because, you know, why me, so to speak? But then I think the hardest part was actually trying to prepare myself to tell my wife.
They wanted to have a show about HIV for kids because they wanted kids to understand that just because you had HIV didn't mean you were going to die. And she said they tried to call various people around the NBA. They could not get anywhere in terms of getting Magic's cooperation. And she and her producer called David Stern. And within a few days, it was green-lighted.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/youknowbusiness.
So, David, we're talking about the rise of the NBA and how David Stern has handled certain things over the years. Obviously, you know, David Stern's time as commissioner was not without controversy. Among his biggest tests was the Malice at the Palace, the infamous brawl between the Pacers and the Pistons back in 2004, where players went into the stands and fought fans.
Artestis in the stands! Oh, this is awful. Fans are getting involved. Steven Jackson's in the fans. Rasheed Wallace going into the stands.
That was a figurative and literal black eye for the NBA. The angst that created amongst advertisers, to be sure, but also towards fans who were appalled that this could happen, had a really, really chilling effect on the popularity of the league. You have to remember that that was also immediately after Michael Jordan's final retirement as a player, so that era was already going to be a challenge. And then you have, as you mentioned, players going into the stands and literally having fights with fans. No matter the motivation, no matter who is at fault or who is responsible, the takeaway was you had black players going into the stands and fighting white fans. And you just could not have a worse visual for a league that it really, if not transcended, I think that's a bit much. I don't think they transcended racial issues, but they certainly had been able to alleviate a lot of angst amongst advertisers and ticket holders and consumers of the NBA product about racial issues. This brought a lot of those issues right back to the surface, as they almost always are, just about an inch below the surface.
Right. And so David Stern issues these massive suspensions.
Indiana's Ron Artest has been suspended for the remainder of the season. Indiana's Steven Jackson has been suspended for 30 games.
He also institutes a dress code that to this day is criticized as being, you know, anti-hip hop culture and anti-individualist. And this really created a conversation about who had the power between the players and the league.
Right. I mean, look, this is about Allen Iverson. Let's not mince words here. This was about Allen Iverson, who was the MVP of the league in 2001, who was beloved in Philadelphia by the fans. But Allen was a guy who not only didn't turn away from hip-hop culture, he embraced it full bore. To this day, players in the league will tell you they grew up idolizing Allen Iverson. And one of the reasons they did was he had cornrows, he had tattoos, he wore gold chains. So he was an icon to a lot of people. But the problem is there's a backlash to that popularity. Because while a lot of, you know, frankly, white fathers and white grandfathers were fine with their teenage white sons and daughters having posters of Michael Jordan on their walls, they had a problem if they had Allen Iverson posters on the walls. And so one of the things the NBA did to try and alleviate some of those concerns was the institution of the dress code in 2005.
The dress code was you could wear jeans, just wear a pair of shoes and a shirt with a collar.
The league said if you weren't playing on a given night, you had to wear what they call business casual attire on the bench. In short, you couldn't dress like Allen Iverson, okay, if you're sitting on the bench. And that's what it was about.
And you wrote a great anecdote about a time Allen Iverson goes into a meeting in David Stern's office.
Yeah, well, this was the other issue that had come up with Allen. You know, because Allen had fancied himself to be a rap star.
For the year 2G, the rap game changed for one nation. Jews ain't slain anything on this plane. Remains are found when the best kept secret.
Allen put out a rap album, I think it was 2000, that had some very, very dicey lyrics, a lot of homophobic lyrics. Once the NBA got wind of this, David Stern called Allen Iverson up to New York and read him the Riot Act and essentially said, you are not putting that album out. And if you do, you're going to get suspended for as long as I feel like suspending you, because that's not in the best interest of the league. And, you know, essentially he said, this is my league. It's not your league. It's my league. And under that pressure, Iverson backed down and the album was never released. So this was, again, part of this tension that was going on between the NBA and its star player, which culminated, again, in the dress code in 2005.
And, you know, surprisingly, obviously there was tension between Allen Iverson and David Stern, but in some ways there was the sense that Iverson respected how much power David Stern wielded.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, and that's not unique to Allen Iverson because, again, David was very forceful and exuded real power that he could get done what he said he could get done. And if you were in his way, he would run over you, figuratively, of course. And this, again, was not just something he did with players. He did this with owners. He was not bashful about threatening owners with fines and suspensions and anything if he thought they were not acting in the best interest of the league. And this is what made him unique to me amongst commissioners in all sports. Because you have to remember, commissioners work for the owners. The owners hire them. The owners can fire them, you know. And so he certainly was a stalwart advocate for the league and for its owners. But he was not afraid to challenge those owners as well. So he ruled with an iron fist. And it's a testament to how much he was respected that the owners pretty much allowed him to do that and took his discipline without retribution.
Well, so Stern retires in 2014, and he hands the reins of the NBA to Adam Silver in a completely different state than when he took over. What was the state of the NBA when David Stern retired?
Well, certainly the NBA, by any measure, whether it's, you know, revenue or advertising dollars or TV packages with its TV partners, is at, you know, it's not even comparable. It's like they're two different businesses. I mean, the NBA is now a multi-billion dollar industry. On the floor, the league, and again, this is also something else that David Stern was central in. The league instituted rules changes, really starting in 2004, 2005, but even before then, that fundamentally changed how the game was played on the floor. In the 80s and early 90s, the game was incredibly physical. There were fights. There was a lot of holding and grappling and pushing and shoving, especially in the paint. You would get hit. You would get knocked off your feet. You would get shoved to the floor. And there, you would occasionally be called for a foul for that, but not always. The rules were changed to eliminate all of that contact in the paint. It prohibited almost all contact, even far from the paint. And so what happened was the game became a much more free-flowing game in which offense became much more prevalent. And as the game's physicality departed, you saw teams begin to realize that the three-point shot was a much more important weapon to utilize on a regular basis than almost all two-point shots.
As Curry hit another three for the record, goal! There it is. Everyone's aware of it. No man has made 13 threes in a game until tonight.
You saw scoring rise immensely. So the NBA that Adam Silver inherited from a financial standpoint, from a TV standpoint, from a play standpoint, was light years ahead of the league that David Stern inherited 30 years before.
And one of the major parts of David Stern's legacy is the globalization of the game and of the league. I mean, he really shattered the boundaries of how big and how far we ever thought an American league can grow. The NBA Finals is broadcast in more than 200 countries. And David Stern was also really just one of the first businessmen, at least in sports, but even beyond sports, to see China as the next frontier. I remember one of the first interviews I ever did, it was in college with David Stern, and I asked him, you know, what's the number one thing the NBA looks for in a job candidate? And he literally said fluency in Mandarin.
Oh, I certainly think he was among the biggest and most successful visionaries. And then you also had NBA games and NBA rights packages sold to international television networks and international and into countries around the world that allowed them to broadcast NBA games live. Now, sometimes those games came on because of the time difference at 3 or 4 in the morning. But you could begin to see that people were watching. You know, people were tuning into those games. I've had so many people from around the world tell me how they grew up watching games late at night or watching them or taping the game and watching it the next morning. But it was the vision, I think, of David Stern to understand that basketball could have a global reach. And while we certainly have seen today that there are unintended consequences to that global reach sometimes, the fact that the NBA is a global sport and is starting now a league in Africa, which is the first of its kind, speak to that outreach throughout the world. And really laying the groundwork for China to become the biggest market for the NBA in the entire world, where a billion people watch Houston Rockets games because of Yao Ming.
And finally, David, David Stern was once asked how he wanted to be remembered.
To quote Rasheed Wallace, that he played hard.
Wait, you're quoting Rasheed Wallace?
Of course, the muse, okay? he played hard, that's all.
So in your words, what is David Stern's legacy?
Well, it's difficult to quantify that, you know, in a few sentences. I certainly think David Stern's the most important figure in the modern history of the NBA. And perhaps Jordan, you could say he and Jordan are one and 1A in some order, but, you know, I do believe that there would be no modern NBA without David Stern. He's the person that had the vision, laid the groundwork, enforced that vision, and helped the NBA become the best version of itself, which is one where the players were the stars and the superstars became household names around the world. The players certainly were responsible for growing the game in terms of fan appreciation and fan interest. But David Stern's the one that made all of that possible, because in every way he had a hand in everything that allowed those players to be put on the platforms that allowed them to sell the game to the world. And for that, he is, to me, a transcendent figure in the history of sports and in the history of this league, and you know, certainly in the history of modern sports consumption by people around the globe.
Right. Well, David Aldridge, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us to talk about the life and legacy of Commissioner David Stern.
You're very welcome.
On Wednesday, current NBA Commissioner Adam Silver released a statement on David Stern's passing, saying, quote, "Because of David, the NBA is a truly global brand, making him not only one of the greatest sports commissioners of all time, but also one of the most influential business leaders of his generation. Every member of the NBA family is the beneficiary of David's vision, generosity, and inspiration. Our deepest condolences go out to David's wife, Diane, their sons, Andrew and Eric, and their extended family, and we share our grief with everyone whose life was touched by him."
Thanks for listening. And we'll be back tomorrow with one more look back at stories that changed sports in 2019. From Wondery and The Athletic, I'm Kavitha Davidson.
And I'm Anders Kelto. See you tomorrow.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.